And welcome to the Fanboy Garage. I'm Chris Lasanti, joined by my co-host Aaron Varola.
Yo, what's going on, folks? Woo! Episode 34? Is that right?
Yep.
All right. Man, we're just plowing through these things. As always, thank you guys for listening to the Fanboy Garage, part of the Revenge of the Fans podcast network. And it's been a long time coming, but we've got two very special guests who are joining us this evening or today, whenever you're listening to this. And we're quite excited. And it is none other than Rick Hsu of the Batman on Film podcast. What's up, Rick?
Hey now.
Right.
Do a hey now. It's like this thing that Bill, he, you know, this started with, it's a Howard Stern thing, but it started in the Gary, I think the Gary Shanley show. Mm. Does that sound right to you guys?
Yes.
Did you ever watch that?
That's exactly where it was.
And now,
from the Larry Sanders show.
Larry Sanders or Gary Shanley? Yeah, Larry Sanders. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this, hey now, and now I'm just freaking like something I always have to do. It's weird. Anyway, what's up, guys?
Hey.
What's going on? Welcome back.
And I know Ryan is slightly delayed at the moment, but we'll patch him in as soon as he's ready to go. But,
Sheriff Foss is what we call him, and he's locked down with his kiddo.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear that. I was like, sleep training, bro, sleep training. But it's always the Wild West when it comes to kids. So, yeah, we're stoked, man. It's been a long time since you've been on the show. You were our first guest. You know, it's good to have you here again. And but this time we're taking it to your neck of the woods. I know we've always talked Star Wars with you, and but we want to talk Batman today. Lots of stuff happening there.
Yeah, man, it's an exciting time to be a Batman on Film, or let me say this, Batman in cinema, so does it sound like I'm patting our backs. It's an exciting time to be, it's a good time to be excited for Batman movies. How's that?
Yeah, yeah, and Chris goes way back, you know, Batman is like his all-time favorite superhero, right, Chris?
I am currently recording this in Batman pajama bottoms.
Yes. Wow.
Yes.
Is it what incarnation of Batman is on your?
It's just the symbol.
Nice.
The yellow, the classic bat symbol all over the black bottoms.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love it.
I don't think I have any kind of I might have a Batman shirt, but literally like I have half of my room, well, my man cave, which is currently in boxes. Most of it was Batman related stuff, actually. I had some really cool stuff. I have like a 1964 Batman puzzle that's put together. It's got him kind of grabbing a gun out of the Joker's hand and socking him in the face. It's pretty cool. I got a whole bunch of Batman collectible stuff here.
That's probably late 70s?
No, it's a 1964 piece.
Oh, it's even further back than that. Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I have like I've got some like really cool vintage Batman stuff. Like I've got a Batman 66 glass, like a drinking glass. I've got there was a card game, the card.
Yeah.
And I've got like the part of the Batman fan club, which has Batman and Robin's. It's like little buttons. So really cool stuff.
Amazing.
But anyways, we're not here to talk about my collection. We're here to talk about all the stuff that's been happening with Batman. I know last week there was some crazy stuff. Finally, some movement, some announcements happening regarding the Batman or whatever it's going to be called once Matt Reeves decides to rename it. And, you know, one of the biggest things that came out of that bit of news was that we finally got a release date, right? So the Hollywood Reporter broke the story, I guess. And tweeted that Batman will be coming to us, or the Batman, however it's called, will be coming to us on June 25th of 2021. So pretty exciting stuff. Rick, what do you think about all that?
I just think it's awesome that we have a release date so we can look forward to it very specifically. And I like that it's coming back to summer. You know, it's kind of old school throwback with the Burton Schumacher films and Nolan trilogy, which was all in June and July. Don't make a liar out of me, internet. I think that's right. Mm-hmm. And so I like to see him back where he belongs. I mean, people say Batman Returns is a Christmas movie. I'm saying that damn thing came out in June, not 1992, guys.
Yeah.
No, I think it's great. I think it's, and what I really like about it are all these little, dare I say, I guess, benchmarks of things that are happening between here and there. So you can say it's very tangible, right? It's coming out in June 2021. And in between then, we have Shazam, we have Wonder Woman 84, we have Star Wars Episode 9, we have a mm-hmm. lot of cool, we have Avengers, we have, Far From Home. We have a lot of really cool stuff to look forward to between here and this. So it'll be here before we know it.
Yeah.
Enjoy the ride.
So one might think that, with it coming out in 2021, that production should start relatively soon, right? Like at least sometime towards the end of this year.
Yeah, I would think so. I think that they are the little bit that I'm privy to. I know that they're locking down casting pretty hard right now. And this is nothing anybody really doesn't know. It's pretty public at this point anyway. But I think we'll probably get some sort of an announcement of who's going to be Batman here. Let's say by May, we'll know. Maybe sooner. Maybe sooner.
Maybe sooner. You don't think they'd hold it for San Diego Comic-Con? You think it's too late?
No, I don't think it's too late. I think that's possible. But it's hard. Like, it used to be a lot easier to predict these things. But now, with just this 24/7 constant news world that we're living in, and Twitter and social media, who knows how they might do it. I mean, look, how did we get the official announcement that Ben Affleck was no longer Batman, right? Everybody was kind of wondering, well, how is that going to happen? Is Warner Brothers really going to put out like a press release on that? Like, Ben Affleck no longer Batman? Well, it came in just in the form of a tweet from Ben Affleck himself. Like, so who knows? That's just my guesstimation that we're probably going to know sooner than later, because I think they would rather control the narrative anyway. They don't want that to leak out.
Yeah. Right.
We'll see.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think these days, that's what you want to avoid. You don't want this thing to leak and then be forced to have to do some type of official thing. Just put it out there as soon as you have it cast, because I have never seen more rumors as I've seen in the last, or people coming up with their own theories. It's been a long time since we've had a casting curiosity like we have for this movie. And I think part of it was because of the Affleck thing. Part of it was because people want to see what direction they were going to take with the character. So there was more to it than just an actor. It was a whole concept and philosophy that people wanted to see where they were going with it. But yeah, I mean, there's no way this thing won't leak out before the longer they wait on it.
Yeah. And that's a good point, man. Like they just need to control the narrative. We're all on the same page on that. And I think they're going to, so
yeah,
we'll see.
Yeah. That's been some of my biggest issues with Warner Brothers as a studio, as it relates to the DC properties and characters, is that they, I mean, it's changing now, but they just kind of let things fly off the handle and let the rumor mill spin. And, I'm glad that Affleck came out, confirmed the news that he was officially out as Batman, but, still excited about, what Matt Reeves is going to bring to the table. But, they definitely need to get a better handle in terms of making those kinds of announcements. So, or play a very tight game in terms of how they're rolling the news out.
No, I agree with that on one hand, and then I'll push back and play devil's advocate. I guess it's kind of hard to say they're going to make an official announcement that Affleck is out. That's like putting out a negative in a negative fashion. The way the way it actually unfolded was rather clever. I mean, it was, they knew it was coming. They're making an official announcement. And then, Ben Affleck just retweeted it and from Deadline, just saying, peace out, looking forward to the Matt Reeves film. Mm-hmm. But that also ties into why I think we might know sooner than later who it is. Because now that's out there, right? Now this thing will start moving pretty quickly, I think.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, Rick, were you at all surprised that Affleck finally put the nail in a coffin and came out and said, "Nah, I'm not doing this anymore"?
No, I mean, I have a, if you go to the Batman on Film YouTube video, the day after, or maybe even the day of Justice League's release, I did a reactionary video of the box office, or it was actually more, I guess, really the weekend, because I've reflected over the last couple and I was talking about it then, that he was done, and that, that was just my guess. And, I've been wrong before. In this particular case, I was right. and which is rare, according to my wife. But anyway, so no, I saw the writing on the wall, and then we were privy to the whole Jake Gyllenhaal meeting.
Right.
And once I kind of got word on that, I, you know, obviously that just sort of solidified the move. For me, it was never about, is Affleck done? Even when he was at, oh guys, where was he? Oh goodness. When he was on stage and said, man, I'm still Batman. I crawl around as like an ape for Matt Reeves or whatever. That was last year. I remember thinking, I was a little annoyed with that, going, come on, dude, you're done. You know, you're done. Don't say stuff like that. I know you can't say I'm done yet, but you don't have to say, you don't have to like thunderously marry yourself to the role. You can be a little bit more coy maybe, but, but for me, it was more along the lines of, quite frankly, it still is Affleck's done, but what is Matt Reeves specifically going to do with this picture? Is this a hard reboot? Is this completely disconnected from what's considered as the DCEU? Mm-hmm. Or does this exist in a vacuum akin to like the Nolan trilogy, for instance? And so I think it's probably leaning that way. That's my educated guess, is that it's going to be a completely separate film. But that's always been sort of the more the thing for me, is not so much as Affleck in it. I just, my heart's a heart. I knew he was done.
Mm-hmm.
It's what is Matt Reeves doing? Is it still his Batman? Is it a prequel to his Batman? Is it a soft reboot? I say that, I always reference basically what Joel Schumacher did when he took over.
It was Val Kilmer, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was still in the same universe as those Tim Burton films, which is weird, but it was. And, I mean, you know, a lot of the same cast was still there, obviously, with Alfred and Gordon.
Yes.
But I don't know. I think this is going to be – I hope I'm not jumping around here if you have any questions about this, but I think this is going to be a hard reboot.
Yeah, I think it is too, and I'm okay with that. I'm more okay. I know Aaron's the continuity king, so he gets hives over all this stuff. But for me, and I did see something, and I don't know if it was anything official or whatever, because I haven't been following this that deeply, because I was waiting for like a hard release date and things to start moving before I started to get really excited about this. But like for me, I don't want this to be like, oh, this is a younger version of Affleck's Batman, because to me that doesn't really accomplish anything. Like, just to tie that all together for what? Like, so you can watch BVS and Justice League and then this Batman movie and make yourself feel like it's all part of one big thing, even though everybody's going to be different in it. I don't know what that really accomplishes. So yeah, I'd rather go, let's make this a reboot, because we don't know where this DCEU is headed anyway going forward.
Well, have you listened to Toby Emmerich, and even in the words of Patty Jenkins, it certainly just sounds like they're going for director-driven, standalone films, and letting these properties breathe and these characters shine on their own, which I think is the right move personally.
Yeah. I mean, it certainly bodes well from a storytelling perspective, but there still is some sort of light connective tissue, right? Like, you know, in Aquaman, he references Steppenwolf, and obviously that had to do with the rest of the Justice League. You know, we expect to see some sort of connection to a Batman and a Superman in Shazam.
But you know,
this up until this point.
Yes, the only thing I'll say to that is that keep in mind that both of those films were in pre-production, and actually in Aquaman's case, and even a little bit of Shazam, they were already filming under the old regime, right? So that was still part, and really, I think Wonder Woman 84 might even be a little bit, I might have my timeline on that a little messed up, but so those films are, they were the way they were before all these changes took place internally.
So pre-Sonata.
Exactly. Now, and even with that said, in Aquaman, you had one throwaway little line about Steppenwolf, and that's it. Mm-hmm. And I don't suspect we'll see anything or hear anything at Wonder Woman 84. I think it's one of the reasons that Patty Jenkins had her in period pieces anyway, because she doesn't necessarily have to marry herself to that. I'm not saying that's her number one reason, but I certainly think it helps. And she's on record saying now that her third film, I guess she's got a trilogy in mind, which is great, but I love Wonder Woman, is going to be a contemporary piece. So that'll be real interesting to see how she tackles, especially that film, when she's really under this new moniker, you know, this. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of exciting things. And there's the Black Label stuff as well. And maybe this Matt Reeves Batman falls under that. I don't know. I certainly know the Todd Phillips Joker stuff or Joker film is in that category. So it's, right. I think we're just going to have a lot of really cool properties in individual films and not worry about connective tissue. It's my guess.
Yeah. And I've been a very big proponent of that. I've been somebody who never believed that they needed to even go the shared universe route with the DC properties. I mean, you could have very loosely connected these things just with references and things, but I was never somebody who believed that Gotham City needed to be right next to Metropolis. Like, that didn't need to be a thing. And these characters are so rich with their history and their tradition. It's so different from what Marvel needed to do. I mean, when you have Batman and Superman and Wonder Woman at your disposal, like, they should have all along gone in the direction of, like, director-driven, let's just make the best movie featuring these characters that we could make that is true to the character. Doesn't matter, like, they don't have to have one tone. Not everybody needs to be Batman. Like, just let each movie feel like its own thing. And then they could have had it connected enough to the point where if they needed to make a Justice League movie, they could have. And those differences between the characters, which is what always made the Justice League dynamic interesting, would have really come through. So I'm glad that they're finally going in this direction now where it seems like, you know, Aquaman was an Aquaman movie and Shazam's going to be its own thing. And this Joker thing is really going to be its own thing. And, you know, the Batman will be its own thing as well. Like, that's where I want to be with these movies.
Yeah, and you said something interesting. I certainly didn't want to interrupt you, but you, I'm going to paraphrase here, but you said that you could sort of allude to something. Doesn't necessarily have to be in your face, or right. How did you phrase it?
You can have it loosely connected just by referencing things, you know, just like a little, you know, like the Wayne thing that was in Man of Steel. The Wayne satellite.
100%. And I will go back to the Schumacher films. I mean, this is why Superman works alone. The circus must be halfway to Metropolis by now. And look, yes. Birds of Prey is a film that is most certainly under this new regime. I guess, yeah, that's fair to say.
Yeah.
It's predominantly, if you know, at worst or best, depending how you're looking at it. But even, you know, Margot Robbie's Harley Quinn has a dog collar that says Bruce. Well, that Bruce is Affleck's Batman. That's who that is. But we won't see him. I seriously doubt it. I seriously doubt we see Affleck. It's not going to have anything to do with Matt Reeves' Batman. You know, it'll just sort of be there. It's a little nugget. You know that he exists somewhere in that universe, just like you knew in Batman Forever when Bruce Wayne is talking to Dick Grayson at Wayne Manor after his parents were killed, that there is a Metropolis somewhere, and obviously Superman does exist. And according to George Clooney, he works alone. And I think I think you're absolutely on the money when you say that. I think that's what we're going to get. Now, in terms of like Shazam, for instance, I've been ridiculed on this, but I was even suggesting that, you know, even those movie props that they had, those newspaper, I just gave myself away. The stuff that they were showing in terms of the newspaper clips and everything, I was like, those could just be movie props. Superman. Who knows? They could do that. They could change that if they wanted to. Or they just edit some of that stuff out and keep it in the background. Or that Superman and Batman do technically exist in that universe. We just may not ever see them again.
Right.
It's really complicated, I think, sometimes for the average moviegoer, because they're like, so what is this again? I mean, God, guys, I knew people that thought Batman versus Superman was a direct sequel to the Nolan films and just Ben Affleck replaced Christian Bale. I'm like, no, totally different. But at the end of the day, just make good movies. That's it. Just make these movies good.
Yeah. No, 100%.
Now, Aaron, you're not actually disappointed that these films aren't going to be that connected, right? I mean, you don't really want Batman in that crappy Aquaman movie, do you?
Boy, here we go.
Definitely not. No, yeah, oh, man. I just
Aaron
got called
loves
out.
Aquaman.
Oh, yeah.
Rick, you should have been in the theater with me watching, next to Aaron, watching Aquaman. I said there was this crazy person at the end of the movie when the credits rolled that yelled out, "Thank God it's over," and then I realized that was me.
Actually, Chris makes me look like the number one fan of Aquaman. That's how different. That's the stages of hate for that film. But I mean, look, it doesn't bother me that they're not connected. It in some cases, it you know. it does kind of drive me a little nuts, because I think for the average fan or moviegoer, they might be asking those questions, but I could be totally wrong. Like, they might get a little confused, but then just say, but you know what? It's still a great Batman movie. I don't really care how connected this is to anything. Or, you know, I don't think they're going to kind of get their hopes up that at some point these characters will all eventually meet up again, or that they may have already, and that they're completely different actors playing those characters. I don't know. I think the only thing that gets me disappointed is in just seeing some of the footage and the behind the scenes stuff coming from the Joker film, that there may never be an opportunity to connect that Joker to a Batman. And that just kind of gets me bummed out a little bit, because, you know,
I don't think that's the intention behind that film. I have a theory that I think that's going to be just a movie, and that's it. There's not going to be a sequel. There's not going to be, I could be wrong, I'm just saying this is just my guess. I think that's just going to be a standalone movie with a true beginning, middle, and end, and it's over. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what I think. Now, you know, technically speaking, if Matt Reeves is a complete reboot, like I think it is, the Joker will exist in that universe, whether we see him or not, he's there. Right. Technically, Jared Leto's Joker still exists in the Birds of Prey, even though I think that's a pretty good example of a soft reboot as well, but still he'll exist. And then we'll have Todd Phillips. So we'll technically kind of have like three cinematic Jokers existing all at once. Truthfully.
A little bit of crazy.
Yeah, right. The key is how they balance that out. And also, which one do we need to see? Anyway.
And do you think, I mean, in that model, do you think people would be confused? Do you think they care enough? If there is some sort of confusion, they're like, wait a second. This Harley Quinn, that Joker, this Batman, no Joker, or a different Joker.
I think it's inevitable, but I think that's been happening anyway. Like I said, I had friends that thought that Batman versus Superman was a continuation of the Nolan films. I saw Rogue One with my wife and my uncle, who my wife likes Star Wars films, and he does as well. And I swear to God, it was like midway through before he was like, wait a minute, that's not Leia. Right. Okay. Right. Yeah. What timeline is this? What is this? I mean, so that's just, I think it's unavoidable, you know, but
yeah.
I also think it depends on how involved those characters are in these movies. Like, you know, we're assuming Jared Leto's Joker is going to exist in the Birds of Prey universe somehow, but I mean, maybe there's not really much of a reference to it. You know, maybe it's just a passing mention or a picture or something. I would hope that there's not going to be a Joker, even though in theory there will be a Joker that exists in Matt Reeves' universe some way, somehow. We've gotten so much Joker over the years that I'm hoping that he kind of steers away from that anyway, and we won't have to worry about that for a little while. And then, you know, this Todd Phillips thing, you know, that's going to be its own thing altogether. So I have a feeling that, and especially depending on how the Todd Phillips Joker movie does, that, you know, we may not be getting as much Joker at all, even though, yes, in theory, he exists in all of these universes. So I don't know that we have to worry too much about confusion.
Yeah, you're right. I think that most audience members are smart enough to be able to decipher this, but in the same breath, I'm going to contradict myself. Most people that see these movies, and I talk about general audiences a lot, and sometimes I get eye rolls, but we're a different type.
100%.
We're not the majority that are going to these films. We're just not. There's not enough of us to get these films to $1.5 billion, right? So we're a subculture that is the driving force behind this. We're the heart and soul of these properties, but I always kind of make an analogy of like, you know, think about a college football team, right? And go to any, like here in Texas, one of the biggest obviously is UT, University of Texas Longhorns. Go to any game, sold out, thousands and millions of fans. How many of those people actually graduated from that university? Hell, even were ever enrolled, right? And it's like that all across America in every college you can name. And I look at it the same way as fandom for these films. Like, we're the graduates of the university, but we're still like the small portion of the actual fans, you know, oh, that actually support the films and buy the jerseys and go to the games. And so keeping that balance in mind is tricky, especially now with online, where our voices are louder. And Aaron, we saw this with like the quote unquote Last Jedi backlash, how important suddenly these voices are that are truly in the minority.
Right.
But, right. You know what I'm saying? So for them, just make good films, and the little confusion they have, it can be a whisper in the ear from the person sitting next to them, the us's, and they'll be fine. And then for us, are we ever going to be pleased as fans? I don't know. No. Not collectively.
Right. There's always some fighting happening.
Well, yeah, it doesn't seem like it's possible anymore to have anything close to universal approval on anything anymore. There's always has to be now some subset of something that is just going to be contrarian just for the sake of, you know, Twitter entertainment.
There are factions of fans right now that are bitter and pissed off about this Affleck and the Snyder thing. And I'm not making fun of them. I'm not mocking them. I'm just saying that they exist and there's thousands of them. And a great deal of those people have already made their minds up. They're probably not going to like a new Batman with a new actor in it. Mm-hmm. That's just the sad state of affairs, right? That's just kind of how fans are. But we'll get through all this. And I'm hoping that what Matt Reeves can pull off, and I hope I'm wrong about that, by the way, but it's just there's other properties, other franchises that are proven this time and time again. But I would just like to see this film come out. And I think it's better that it stands on its own. It's its own universe. It's its own world. It's its own story. It's one director's vision. And based on what I've read and what Matt Reeves is saying, how he wants this film to be and be very detective driven, man, I don't know, guys. I was never the biggest Matt Reeves fan prior to the announcement of this. I like his Apes movies. He's cool. Mm-hmm. But every quote, everything he is saying about his vision for this movie has me so excited.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that it unites. I hope it sparks that mainstream audience that we're talking about, just like the Nolan films did, particularly the last two, because Batman Begins wasn't a huge hit, but Dark Knight Rises certainly were. And then it taps into the fanboy sensibilities that we all have. And if he does that, man, that's a pretty remarkable feat, you know?
Yeah. So sort of playing off of that whole, you know, focus on the detective story, what kind of villains do we think would work best, given that structure, given that sort of plot where he's, you know, actively hunting somebody down and sort of piecing things together, being the master detective that he is?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. I've talked about this with Bill on Batman on Film and Friends. Apparently, it looks more and more likely that the Penguin is going to be in it. If that's accurate, I think that's cool. And I think that obviously playing him as the mob boss, and certainly getting away, obviously, what Tim Burton did with his character in Batman Returns, whether you liked it or not, it just
it
wouldn't work for this film. And then it talks about a rogues gallery. You know, I wouldn't have any heartburn of this was treated a little bit like Batman Begins, where there were multiple villains.
Yes.
But they didn't. The movie was still about Bruce Wayne.
Right.
And maybe Matt Reeves can do something similar where they're there and they're wreaking havoc and they're giving him hell. But the movie is about, you know, Batman's worst enemy is probably himself and his struggles and everything. I'd like to see that. And not worry so much about. I would like the characters to be interesting and great, but nothing so where if suddenly the Penguin wants to pop up in like the second one or third one, it would work. Kind of like how what Nolan did with Scarecrow, Dr. Crane, right?
Right.
Right. But he couldn't have done that with the Joker and or Bane or really even Catwoman for that matter. Just wouldn't have worked. But that worked. And even having Roz come back as a cameo in Dark Knight Rises, that worked. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I think that's the direction I'd like to see it go. There's who knows what villain. Just make the story about Bruce and Batman, and let those guys. But hey, let me ask you guys this: if Matt Reeves does do a trilogy, can he get away with doing three films without having a Joker?
Yeah, I think he can. Batman obviously has the best rogues gallery in comics. So there's such, and you could pull even like, you could do fascinating things even with some of the deeper cuts, especially if you are going to go more of the director driven stuff, because you could get into like, you could do like a Holiday thing, you could do a Hush thing, you know, you could start to go into those types of characters that fit more with the detective vibe. I don't know if, I think fans would be expecting a Joker to pop up at some point, but I think as long as they don't do a tease, like, so, you know, how they set up the Joker at the end of Batman Begins with the playing card. Like, as long as you don't start to do things like that and throw in little hints and nods to the Joker, I think people might be okay with it. It's when you start to tease that a Joker exists in that universe, that's when people are going to expect a Joker. I would stay away from that Joker as from the Joker as you possibly can, though.
You know, thinking about I'm thinking about my inflection on how I said that. I see how you're responding. Let me rephrase. That's a great response. I meant more for the director and the creators. Can they get away with it? That's not the right word. That's where I tripped up and had you thinking I was asking something else. I wasn't talking about the fans per se. I was talking about can a creative mind, you know, do a trilogy and not touch the Joker? Like, he's the most badass villain, not just in Batman, but ever.
I got it. Yeah.
And so that's what I meant. Can Matt Reeves control himself and not use the Joker?
I guess we're going to find out.
Yeah.
I certainly hope so. Because it would have been like three times the charm, right? So, you know, Nolan's trilogy had the Joker. The Joker is referenced as Batfleck's villain, right? To do it again kind of feels like overkill. And there's so many other characters that they can kind of play with. If they really feel compelled to dabble with the Joker, I'd say, you know, step up to the challenge and do something different with the Riddler. You know, there's some opportunities there. So why not see if, you know, they could fill that void with that kind of character. But
you know what movie I always think about? I would kind of like to see the vibe of the Riddler or something like Seven.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people think, oh, you can't do the
Riddler. Saw.
He's too similar to the Joker. I'm like, he is? I guess. Well, I guess he is in the TV show, and I guess Jim Carrey was.
Yes.
But no, you can freaking, no way, man. And you don't have to have him in a green suit with question marks all over him. Although, I want something represented, you know, at least a little throwback, but, and just make him someone that just, I don't know if you guys F-bomb on your show, just Fs with Bruce's mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. That's exactly what they should be doing with that character. I mean, people who say, oh, he's too much like the Joker, like you said, that's, we're looking at, you know, Frank Gorshin and we're looking at Jim Carrey and what they did with the character, but there are ways you could do the Riddler, you know, like they've done in the comics and whatnot, that can make that character really fascinating. And I like the idea of the Penguin, but I only like the idea of the Penguin if he's a villain, but not the villain. Where he's, you know, he's a villain, he's a presence, and he could even be somebody that carries over like as a theme throughout the entire trilogy, but he's not the featured villain. Like, he's just a villain in that movie. He's a bad guy in the movie, but that's not what the main focus of the story is. That's how I would prefer the Penguin to be.
So he's kind of like the mastermind behind the scenes.
Yeah, pulling, even if he's not
like
the mastermind.
He gets the hired hand.
You know, he's a guy. He's a bad guy in that bad world, in that seedy Gotham, you know.
Yes.
That's how I wouldn't mind seeing
he's got
him.
He's got his nightclub. And
yep.
He's got his mob ties and...
Sort of like the way Falcone was portrayed in Begins.
Yeah,
like that.
I could see that.
Like an untouchable guy who had, like, you know, government in his pocket, like just a kind of crooked politician.
Yes, and you could even play on that a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Did you guys read The White Knight by chance?
I have not read it yet.
Okay,
I haven't read it.
Say, but... There's something in a theme in that book that I was going to reference. I don't want to just. I'll leave that off the table, but yeah, I mean, look, I mean, he ran for mayor and Batman Returns and was it mayor or city council in the TV show? It was mayor too, right? I think it was
mayor. Yeah, it was mayor.
Yeah,
Mayor Cobblepot.
Eric Cobblepot, and you know who that is, right, Aaron? being us that we're big Rocky fans,
mm-hmm.
That's Burgess Meredith, boy.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Dynamic Blunder. Not in Tomorrow Rock.
Oh man.
Yeah. What a great career, man. He was Penguin and Mickey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good stuff.
And he was the the father in Grumpy Old Men too.
I remember that. Yeah, the guy that like ate bacon like all the time, right?
Burgess Meredith.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, yeah.
Great actor.
Yeah. Phenomenal. So let's talk a little bit about casting. So let's tackle the heavyweight. Let's tackle Batman. Who do we think, if they're gonna skew younger, who are some of the faces or I mean, maybe we don't even need faces at this point, because I know that the list is like long as hell for potential Batman candidates, but the one that I heard swirling around today was Armie Hammer.
Yes.
Do we think he could do it? Do we think he's the right fit?
Yes, and I have a feeling that's probably the direction they're going in. I think it's going to be him, or it's going to be an unknown. Now, listen, just at the top of this part of the conversation, I just want to say that I still wanted Jake Gyllenhaal in the role. I think that dude's a beast. And I was bummed that he didn't take it. And obviously, when he went off to do Spider-Man, I kind of sealed the deal, right? Mm-hmm. So I was a little bummed out by that. But now I just, just get a great actor, right? It doesn't have to be, nothing against Affleck. I think he did a really good job in BVS, and I think he's a much better director than he's an actor. But he is a good actor. But Ben Affleck to me was more about the aesthetic of Batman.
Yes.
He looked just like Batman walked out of the off the comic book page. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily need that. I mean, look, one of the best Batmans ever is Michael Keaton. The dude's tiny, mm-hmm.
Right.
And he was Mr. Moms. He looked like an everyman. And when he's Bruce Wayne, he blended in because he wasn't 6'4", 200 something pounds. So I would be okay with going back in that direction and having a really strong character actor. But as far as Hammer goes, I don't know his stats. Like, how is he? What, six?
He's like 6'3", I think.
Is he 6'3"? Oh yeah. Wow, okay.
See, I think he's a big boy.
See, I'm 6'3", and when I'm on when I'm on camera, I look 7 feet tall. You know, that's what camera does to you. Vince Vaughn is like 6'4".
This says 6'5".
Hammer's 6'5"? Is he really?
That's what it says is. Here, yeah.
Jeez. See, and the only problem I have with that is get out of comics, right? We're talking about live-action films. When you have a playboy socialite, Bruce Wayne, that's a multi-billionaire, and he's supposed to be, it's supposed to be incognito. You're not supposed to know who he is, but you have a 6'5"
yes.
Bruce Wayne
yes.
walking around town. It's not... I want it to be inconspicuous, and
well, that was the fascinating thing with Keaton, that worked in their favor. And look, people complain about casting decisions all the time, right? And especially with superhero casting, like I don't know that there's ever been one that anybody like applauded the first time they heard it. It doesn't seem like it anyway. But with Keaton, like his Bruce Wayne was like, really, you're Bruce Wayne? Like, people didn't even believe he was Bruce Wayne, right? Let alone Batman. When they heard about what their image of what Bruce Wayne should be, that worked in his favor. But you're right, like having a guy like...
Ooh, in that scene, like, I don't mean to interrupt, but like Kim Basinger first meets him with Knox.
Yeah, with Knox.
And they kind of give him an up and down, like, oh, you're Bruce Wayne.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Go ahead, man. I never really thought about that moment like that.
Yeah, so for me, now you get a guy, like you said, he's walking around, he's six... It starts to like, well, how many 6'5" guys do we have walking around Gotham City? Like,
exactly.
unless they have a bunch of them purposely that they want to cast, a lot of big people. Yeah,
you should look at Bruce Wayne and not think he could potentially be Batman.
Right.
That's just my view.
Yeah. If but Bruce Wayne's walking down the street and he's a guy you don't want to mess with, even in a suit, kind of defeats the whole point of the Batman concept.
Perfect.
To me.
Oh, I'm going to steal that line. If Bruce Wayne's walking down the street and he's not a guy you want to mess with, even in the suit, it might not be the right person to cast. But here's the deal. So let's say that Matt Reeves does cast Hammer, and he is 6'5". I'm going to trust his judgment, and there's tricks they can do with the camera and everything. I want a strong actor, and I'm not crazy familiar with his work, but just recently I went back and watched some YouTube clips. I'm a big fan of the Facebook film, Social Network.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's brilliant in there.
Dude,
the Winklevosses, yeah.
Did you know, I swear to God, man, it was like 2 years before I knew that was the same guy. I had no idea. I thought it was a set of twins. It was a set of twins.
Great job, man.
Identical twin brothers. And when I found that out, it made me even like him more, because I watched the scene recently where they're sitting and with the dean in the office, and they're trying to tell him that, hey, this guy stole from us, and you know, the code of conduct at Harvard, all that whole scene. Go watch that, man. I watched that. I'm like, he's cast as Batman. Great. You know?
Yeah.
He's good.
Aaron Sorkin at his best. Yes. In that film. Yeah. It's good. I mean, outside of that, I've not been a big fan of Armie Hammer's work. I didn't like, obviously he was the, what's his name? The Lone Ranger.
Yeah, that was terrible.
That was not a great film. I know some folks that listen to our show love The Man from U.N.C.L.E. I'm not a big fan of that film either. Both from a Armie Hammer and Henry Cavill perspective, I just think that was a weak film. So I'm kind of like on the fence with him. I agree. I think he's, you know, he's a big dude. And I just don't, I personally don't see it. I think he'd be better as like a Green Lantern. All that said, I'm sure he would do fine if he were cast. He brings, you know, just looking at what he did on The Social Network, he does bring the sort of legit acting chops when there's some good writing there. And you know, he could pull off the look. So who knows? But yeah. I'm trying to rack my brain in terms of like who else I would love to see in the role, but
I don't know.
I like the idea of having an unknown.
Yeah, you know? Me too. Plus, I'm very terrible with names, like generally speaking. And so, you know, like, what's that actor that was in that one movie that I don't even know how to play the game, dude? I'm seeing people do their fan casting. And you know, they're tweeting pictures and everybody's retweeting. I'm like, am I supposed to know who that person is? I don't even know who that guy is. Oh, he was in Games of Thrones. I'm like, yeah, I've never watched that show before, unfortunately.
Right.
Whatever. So I don't know.
Like Cavill was kind of like an unknown. He had a couple of films under his belt, and he was part of the Tudors. But he kind of came out of nowhere. And then once you put him in the suit, you're like, yeah, that's totally Superman.
I think it's even more paramount to cast a relatively unknown, if not an unknown, as Superman, because you're there's no Cal. It's a pair of glasses and then no glasses. To really disbelieve. Like, I'm glad I never saw Nick Cage as Superman. Sorry, nothing against Nick Cage, but that just would not have worked for me. But, you know, Henry was up for – they were looking at him for Superman Returns as well. Yeah. He beat out Brandon Routh, beat him out.
Yeah.
But now we've never actually had – unless I'm missing something, there's never really been like a complete unknown that's Batman. Been Batman, right? Because you had Michael Keaton – which was controversial, but he was far from an unknown. Then you went to Val Kilmer, who also not an unknown, and George Clooney, Christian Bale, like none of these guys, and Affleck. So none of these guys were unknowns at the time, and some of them were high profile, and it worked. It was fine. Like you said, you have the cowl, and they need to have the acting chops to pull off the Bruce Wayne part, but you know, who knows how important the Bruce Wayne character is going to be in this, you know, is this going to be more Batman focused, Batman the detective, or is there going to be a lot more like Bruce Wayne in it too? I think that makes a difference.
Sure, it does. I like when there's just a nice balance of both. I mean, truthfully, like, you know, I go to The Dark Knight Rises. I didn't care that we didn't see him in his, you know, for half the movie he wasn't even in a suit. I didn't care. I was so invested in Bruce Wayne, I didn't care. Mm-hmm. And then, one of my other favorite Batman films is Batman 89. And I feel like that's a pretty good balance in that film too. Yes. Wouldn't you guys say?
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
I think some of the Bruce Wayne stuff, in fact, I think a lot of the Bruce Wayne stuff in Batman 89 is more fascinating than the Batman stuff. Keaton has some really cool moments in that movie. Like, you know, when he fakes the freak out, you know, to try to distract them. Like he's got that.
You want
to
get nuts?
Yeah.
Let's get nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or how about even when he's at City Hall, he's you know, Dent and whoever else is going up to do their press conference, and all the clowns,
the mimes
walk up, and just that look as he's looking at his trench coat, he's freaking awesome, man. Yeah. And in that casting, was, and one of you guys mentioned it, was very controversial. I mean, it was Mr. Mom and Beetlejuice Batman. Yes. People were pissed.
Right.
But Bill, I think it's Bill. It's on Batman on Film. I'm almost positive Bill wrote it. It might have been one of our guest writers, a Peter Vera, Eric, or somebody. But there's an article that went up on today on Batman on Film that was very specifically about, we have not learned any lessons from all the way back in 1988 to about freaking out about casting.
Right.
You know, whether it was Michael Keaton or whether it was Heath Ledger. And we need to chill and just trust these guys. That's kind of my attitude going into this. And hashtag in Reeves we trust, right?
Yeah, I mean, right. And I think one of the reasons why people freak out is because they can't picture the actor and the things that they've done previously. Right. And that's what they assume they're going to bring to that role. So the whole thing with Keaton was, oh, so this is going to be a comedic thing. It's going to be like a joke, right? Because he was a comedic actor. With Heath Ledger, it was like, oh, he's the pretty boy. It's going to be a pretty boy Joker. Like that. So they
was Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, they're not able to realize that these guys sit through a casting process and people actually watched them, you know, become these characters, and, you know, maybe there is something there. So right away, everyone wants to jump to conclusions. Or if it's the case of, like, Hugh Jackman, which was another controversial thing, when he was cast as Wolverine, everyone freaked out because he was too big and he was too this and that. And it's like, and he didn't, nobody knew who he was, and he came from, like, the Australian, like, stage scene.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like you said, Rick, trust these casting directors and these directors that they saw something in these actors in that role. That means that it doesn't necessarily mean that if you cast a pretty boy or if you cast a comedian or if you cast it, that that's automatically what the direction that they're taking.
Right. You know, I'm not that's all very well said. I'm not the biggest James Bond fan, although there's a handful of movies I like a lot. But has there ever been a bad James Bond? I feel like every Bond has some, you know, has a place.
There have been a couple of bad ones.
You mean the actors or the movies?
The actors, not the films. I'm talking.
Sean Connery in his last appearance as James Bond basically phoned it in.
Well, you know, about Never Say Never Again.
Well, yeah, I just mean in terms of just casting for the part, right? Yeah. Has there ever been a bad casting choice for James Bond?
I was not a big fan of, like, Timothy Dalton as Bond, but that was more of the take they did on the character. I don't know that it was Timothy Dalton himself that was the problem.
Was he Octopussy or no?
No, that was Roger Moore. He was
License to Kill.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's Living Daylights.
Okay. And what was the other?
The Living Daylights, I think.
Living Daylights. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love those films, man.
They're just
The reason I brought that up is because I was going to tie it into Batman. I don't personally think there's been bad casting in Batman. Even George Clooney, it's not his fault. That movie was garbage.
I agree.
It wasn't. He was a good actor then, and he proved that he's a very good actor in the years after that. And so, like, I don't blame him for that performance. See, that was all directorial. There's always been, I mean, even Val Kilmer is one of the finest actors to play Batman, and even in that movie, he didn't have a lot to do. Unfortunately,
he was a brilliant Bruce Wayne, though.
For what he had, especially when what he had to work with.
Yeah.
And by the way, my two favorite Bat voices are probably Val Kilmer and Christian Bale in Batman Begins specifically, because he lost his way a little bit in the Dark Knight sequels. But I was kind of going off the rails, so sorry. But you know, one of my favorite moments in any Batman film to date is when, because Keaton's Batman voice was pretty badass too, but when he drops his Batman voice. And he's just like,
excuse me. Yeah. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Just Michael Keaton. Yes. You knew where I was going.
Yeah, man. I love that too.
You killed my parents. He goes right back into it, right?
Yeah. See,
look at that. I inadvertently do Bell when I do a Batman voice now.
It's part of the show now, man. Bale just had, you know, Bale impacted culture in a really cool way with his Batman. I think, you know, he made him feel real. Like, the dude could be legit, and that's the hardest part, because that by far is my favorite Batman. I think, you know, Affleck did a great job at sort of translating the character off the comic book pages, but in terms of actually feeling like the character could exist in real life, like, it was Bale all the way. And I love the balance between, you know, someone who struggled with this rage and darkness and was trying to masquerade it, and the only one that could see through it was the one that knew him the best, was Rachel, right? So I love that whole last scene and begins where she's like, you know, this is your mask, and it's him as Bruce Wayne. She's like, you are Batman, you are that person at heart. Love that stuff.
I couldn't agree more, and I hope Reeves takes that as license to, hey man, create your own characters.
Yeah.
Create some cool original characters, man. That's part of filmmaking. You know, sometimes these people end up, I was just doing a little research on Alfred for this thing. I was doing a favor for my buddy Andy at Holy Badcast. And I was like, man, I remember Alfred started off in the comics weird. I researched it again, and what defined that character was the 1943 serial. And Ryan had kind of mentioned this to me a couple years ago as well, and I just kind of revisited it. My point to all that, it's also kind of amazing how sometimes, you know, a character can kind of come to life in a movie or serial or whatever that might have brought the character to a new level or never existed in the first place, and now they're kind of part of the mythology. So you just never know. I mean, like, somebody could use Rachel Dawes again down the road. Who knows? I thought that character was strong enough to be able to use her again.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at Harley Quinn. I mean, she was created for the animated series and became an enormous success.
That is a great example. That's even a better example, because mine was Alfred existed. He just had a different last name, and his character, his mannerisms were different. And then they cast a skinny British guy for the Batman 1943 serial. All of a sudden, they were like, okay, we're going to change him, right?
Yeah.
I think, quite frankly, I like Bane. I have Nightfall. I've read those books. I like the character, but I think Nolan made him more interesting. I just do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's just me.
Yeah. So, on the casting stuff, I mean, I think we're just like, whoever plays the best part is the best. Whoever's like the best actor is going to be the best Batman. So going back to some of the stuff we've talked about regarding the villains, if it is the Penguin, do we feel like Josh Gad is the best fit?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much confirmed that he's not in the film, because there's actually.
I hope to God. So bad. I'm sorry. I had to ask that question.
He's not in the film. My dream actor to play the Penguin is deceased, unfortunately. The great late Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh,
yeah, that would have been
so amazing.
Yeah, I don't know why. I've also seen him on Broadway, and guys, dude, I don't want to get off on Philip Seymour Hoffman, but do you guys know the play True West by Sam Shepard?
No.
90% of the play is, or 95% of the play is just two actors in an apartment. It's brothers, and they're just completely different. One's like a successful person, the other one's a bum. It's kind of like The Odd Couple on cocaine, and or just a lot of booze. Anyway, it's a powerhouse play. And John C. Reilly and Philip Seymour Hoffman played the brothers. And I saw them. I saw a dress rehearsal. And the very next night, they switched the parts and they played the other brother. And I remember that was in 2000, I think, or 99, when True West was on Broadway. Anyway, I swear to God, I remember thinking to myself, I want him to play the Penguin. And it was from watching him live in New York. I don't know why. It's so weird. I have that memory. It'll be ingrained in me forever. I walked away from one of my favorite plays watching two powerhouse actors, you know, via osmosis through each other, switching the parts, and then walked away going, I want to see him as a Penguin. And that stuck with me ever since. I don't know why. I was fixated on it. I think there was a rumor circulating around at one time that he might have been considered for something. I don't know. I don't know if there's any accuracy to that. But obviously he's gone, unfortunately. So where does that leave us? I don't know. I don't know who I want to play the Penguin. I don't even know what I want the Penguin to look like.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't. Right. I hate Gotham with like the white hot intensity of a thousand suns. I hate that show, but I like the Penguin in it. I think that guy does a great job.
Yeah, I agree.
And he doesn't look like the Penguin. I mean, you know.
Because he's like skinny and stuff. He doesn't. He's not like the short, like stubby guy.
I mean, for him, Penguin, it started out as an insult, and then it kind of became like a moniker.
Right.
So that's, you know.
And then they, like, shot his legs or broke his leg.
Right.
Yeah, which is why he waddles around.
I mean,
yeah.
technically, yeah. they don't even need to even call the character the Penguin. I mean, you know, if they go in the direction that, like, I'd like to take with that character, like, he could be Oswald Cobblepot. I mean, yeah, he can, you know, have a, the Penguin can sort of be like a little, like, nickname, but I would almost prefer it if they called him Oswald or Cobblepot the whole movie rather than call him the Penguin.
I like that too, and it's kind of like I think about something like Goodfellas. You know, it's Jimmy two times. You know, because he says anything two times, it's Oswald
right.
Penguin. But yeah, it's just kind of like a it's a continuation. It's just a nickname, right?
Right.
Yeah. I don't know Jimmy.
Well, two times. It's like the way that they use the name Two-Face in The Dark Knight, right? It was
perfect.
Sort of internal, like you know, internal affairs thing.
Yes. Wasn't that so well done, dude?
Oh man!
Oh my God! And then when he's talking to Gordon, he said, "What was my
like,
name?"
Say it.
Yeah. Harvey Two-Face. Why should I hide who I am? Oh,
yep.
Damn. But listen, I think that Matt Reeves can is. I really do believe that he's going to give us something as great as those films. And I know that not everybody's listening that likes Batman. The Nolan films may not necessarily be your favorites. I know people that much prefer. Hell, they like the Snyder stuff, or they like Tim Burton stuff, or whatever. So to each their own. It's just I want something for Bat fans, all of us, a film that transcends, right? Like The Dark Knight.
Yeah.
I want something like that where it's not contentious, regardless of your views of B versus S. I want something that just sort of like universally everybody kind of wraps their arms around. And I'm hoping that we get that.
Agreed. Yeah. So, you know, one last question for you guys is, okay, so we've seen the kind of film that Aquaman was, right? Lots of fun, really didn't take itself too seriously. Shazam certainly seems to be following suit. I mean, obviously there should be some weight, some hefty stuff there in terms of, you know, character development and why we should really care about Billy Batson. But do you see the Batman kind of being similar or cut from the same cloth as these other films? Or do you think it's going to feel a lot different from what these other two films are?
I think that this is going to feel more like Chinatown than well those films.
Yeah,
I think that goes back to what I said earlier in the show about now you have the opportunity to make these movies have the feel and the tone that feels relevant to the character, right? So for Aquaman, it worked. For Shazam, it'll work. But for Batman, it's not going to work.
Right.
You know, that tone,
right.
Well, I mean, I'd hope that's not the tone that they're going in, and it doesn't seem like that's where they're going. So, you know, Batman, if they are going to do the true detective story, it's going to, you know, like Rick said, it's going to feel like its own thing. And that's good. That's what all of these movies should be, because these characters are all different.
Right.
Yeah. Right. And that's just it. I love Batman so much, and please don't come at me with pitchforks, internet. I don't want him. I wrote an article last year, I think it was Batman Without Gods, and it's just a personal preference, but I don't even want him. I don't even want Superman existing in his universe.
Right.
I just don't. I just not in live action. And quite frankly, even in comics, I prefer him alone. I just do. I just, that's just what resonates with me. He's so interesting because he's one of us, and there's not a guy flying around that's a god from another planet that makes him not quite as unique and amazing as he is. That's just me. I think it diminishes him. I always have. Now, I'm not saying there's not stories that haven't worked, and I'm not saying it can never work in film again. And, you know, again, it's just my personal opinion anyway. But I just really want him. And you know, Reeves' films don't have to be as grounded as Nolan's films, although I think that's a little bit of an overrated statement anyway, because at the end of the day, like, there's nothing realistic about the Dark Knight trilogy. Like, none of that could actually happen, but the brilliance of those films, it kind of makes you believe that they do. But I don't mind getting it even a little bit more fantastical, right? It's, I always talk about like a Bane, for instance. If he's actually like 8 or 9 feet tall, so be it. Okay,
right,
that's cool. That would not
like a Ra's al Ghul with the actual, you know, Lazarus Pit and all that stuff.
That's actually that's actually immortal.
Yeah.
I mean, and even that a little, that might even be pushing it a little bit. I like how in The Dark Knight Rises, he's in the quote pit. And I like how he comes to visit him in his dreams. He's like, I told you I was immortal. Like, it's all still there.
Even
in the Nolan films, right? But yeah, that one might be tricky. That gets a little bit too, that one's hard. I want to agree. I'm like, yeah, I could see that, and I love the character, but maybe in an animated film.
Yeah.
But you could still take it kind of to the next level. We're not gonna get the Nolan films again, and that's okay. We shouldn't. They existed in a vacuum, and they represented a certain era and one director's vision, and that's what we have, and we'll always have those. I'm forever grateful. I'm ready for something as equally as cool but different. So bring it on, man.
Yeah, I think for me, kind of to your point, Rick, was that it would be great if you could get a movie that was quote unquote grounded, you know, for lack of a better term, like the Nolan trilogy was, but like give him a suit like he had in BVS, you know, like don't have to worry about the suit having to be super tactical and have an excuse for every reason, everything that, you know, give it a reason, just let it be like a comic book suit, like a superhero suit, but you could still make the movie a little bit more grounded and have it be more detective. That would be ideal for me. Because I do think a big appeal for Affleck, his Batman, you know, we've talked about this on the show before, like the attachment that people have to Affleck's Batman is amazing to me because we didn't live with that character very long. I mean, he didn't star in his own movie. You know, he's in BVS where he's sharing the time, and then he's in Justice League again where he's sharing the time. It, to me, that the love of that character and that portrayal, which, again, that was another controversial casting decision at the time, which we forget about, but it was the look and it was that warehouse scene, fight. That's where I think drives a lot of people to that, because, I mean, I don't know how you could watch that character in Justice League and be like, oh, yeah, that's Batman.
Right. I hear you.
Yeah.
And that's not even, you know, what's funny about all that you just mentioned. None of that is my favorite stuff. My favorite stuff in BVS that really works for me is the stuff that I would put in this category of being grounded. Like, I love the scene where he comes down the elevator and it's the first scene he has with Alfred in the Batcave. And they're just talking about, you know, we've always been criminals, Alfred. That whole sequence is just, it's just nuanced and they're just having a conversation and I love it. It's very well done. Mm-hmm. I like when Bruce runs into Metropolis and saves a little girl. Like, that whole exchange is very real. That stuff worked in that film for me. I would like to have seen more of that. I would love to have seen a Ben Affleck directed Batman film where he stars in it, and but it just didn't work out that way. And Justice League is hot garbage in my opinion. And I don't know if that film would have been any better if it would have been the Snyder Cut or not. I have no idea. I can just say that it's time to move on from those films, and that's what they're doing, and keep what works. Like, look, you're not gonna get rid of Gal. I'd march the streets if you did anyway. she's amazing. Keep her. You got to keep Margot Robbie. I mean, my God, you got to keep those two. And Jason Momoa obviously worked. And now what? I mean, I don't want to open a can of worms here, and I know it's you guys' shows, but what the hell are they gonna do with Superman? I have no idea.
That's my thought on that.
Yeah. That's a whole different topic right there. But just to kind of dive into it, I mean, again, it seems like there's a bit of cat and mouse being played again, right? So you've got Henry Cavill going back to his Instagram page, posting something about how he works out with Superman, and him there flexing and looking all buff. And, I don't know what that's meant to mean. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if this is like, hey, studio, yep, I'm still ready and willing, just waiting for the phone call. But sort of understanding behind the scenes that he was asking for a lot of control. I don't know if the studio is willing to play ball with him anymore. So I'm hopeful. I mean, I hope that it all shakes out and it works. But
yeah. And there's a lot of things, and I don't know. I mean, Jimmy Olsen is assassinated. What are you going to do?
I don't know.
Superman's so hard for me because, like, I love Cavill in the role.
I do, too.
Despite the fact that I didn't love every minute of screen time, you know, that character had. I love him in that role, but... And I don't necessarily want to see it recast because I still hold out hope to get that true sequel to Man of Steel that's like the real Superman movie, where we really get to see Clark Kent and we really get to see like the true Superman.
Right.
But you're right. Like, I don't think we could get it at this point because there's too much that went on like with that character and in that universe. So it's like, unless you're going to bring him back and just like redo everything else, which would also be awkward. That's why I'd almost kind of wish that they just leave the character alone for a little while. If it's not going to be Cavill.
It's hard. He's hard to pull off. I mean, look, I love Man of Steel, but that didn't quite work with audiences properly because if it did, we wouldn't have gotten BVS.
Correct.
We've gotten probably a Man of Steel 2 and a Ben Affleck solo Bat film first, you know? And they had a knee-jerk reaction to it falling a little short at the box office and critics slamming it. And then they turned around with BBS, and that was had even a worse response. It did a little better at the box office, obviously, but not as good as they anticipated, and the reviews were even worse. But think about it, man. Like, what Superman films have worked out of all of them? The first two. Really?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's it.
The
Superman
Donner films.
The first two Donner films. The last two, technically there's one Donner film, right? And then there's the Lester Superman 3, and then Superman 4 was just a dumpster fire. But Superman Returns didn't work.
Right.
And then, you know, they were like, okay, he was too soft, he was too sweet, it was too much of a love story, he didn't punch anything. Mm-hmm. Now we're gonna do this Superman, he's gonna like tear down buildings, and that was too violent and too abrasive, and I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you do with them?
I mean, I look at it as, and you know, Superman for some reason has fallen victim, and we talked about this. We did a Superman episode. He has fallen victim to studio interference more than like I think any other of these DC characters. Because it goes back. I mean, the original, you know, studio interference was Superman 2. I mean, you know, obviously they took the movie away from Donner and Richard Lester filmed it, and then you got two different versions later on, And then they completely shifted the character because Richard Lester was a comedy director. The Salkins had him turn Superman 3 into a comedy. I mean, that the opening credit sequence of Superman 3 is probably one of the most insulting things like ever in a superhero movie. I mean, it's a complete slapstick comedy piece.
Yeah. Yes.
And then Superman 4, they sold the rights and Canon Films took it over and made a Canon film Superman movie, begrudgingly. Although Aaron has professed his love for Superman for the Quest for Peace on the show.
Well, and I will say that I actually love Superman 3, but for nostalgic reasons. I recognize that it's crap, but I just don't care.
Right. I'm with you. Plus the fight.
I saw it in the theater in a double feature with Return of the Jedi with my sister, and that memory stayed.
That's why I love Superman 4. It's my first Superman film in the theaters, and you know. And I love the fact that he got scratched in the neck and got radiation poisoning.
Yes. Yeah.
Love that stuff, man.
So, and then, you know, you look at Superman Returns. Well, obviously there was the Superman, the thing that the Tim Burton one that never happened, right? Which was all about studio interference. And then you had Superman Returns where I just really dislike that movie.
Take a five.
What's interesting, and I've told this story, and I'm not trying to make this about my freaking experience, but it's relevant to this conversation. I'll be brief. I was auditioning for that film, and the reason that that's even relevant to this is this reason. I read for that movie, God, I don't know, guys, 15 times over the course of 2 years, I believe, and oftentimes we were reading from like the Superman script from the first film, whatever, but we started getting original sides from a script. I never saw a whole script and it was awful. Like there was one movie and like my dialogue was Clark talking about running into Lois at a frat party and telling her, "Hey, I'm the guy that did X, Y, and Z." You don't remember. Terrible stuff. So I only bring that up for that reason is that I don't think they knew what the hell to do with him at that point. And then enters Bryan Singer, and I don't know who wrote the script for Superman Returns. I don't even know. Do we know offhand? I don't know. Whatever. But he sanctioned it or whatever. He endorsed it. And then you got this what ended up being just this love letter to Donner and Brandon Routh, who, by the way, was a good Superman. Like I like Brandon Routh as Superman. Just the movie was weird.
So
weird movie.
The screenplay was written by Michael Dougherty, who also wrote the scripts for X2.
I don't think that's the guy that wrote the script
and
that I was reading.
Dan Harris, who also was a singer guy, he wrote, also co-wrote X2. But then there was story by Brian Singer, Michael Dougherty, and Dan Harris. So that's who gets credited, at least on the final cut of the movie.
But yeah, so the whole point to all that was just to make a point that they didn't know what the hell to do. And now I'm sorry, I interrupted you. So you were making a larger point about the franchise in general, and I interrupted you.
No, that's right. Yeah, so, I mean, Superman Returns is actually kind of the reverse situation, and it still backfired in the sense that they gave Bryan Singer a lot of freedom to basically say, like, here, make this a direct sequel to the Donner film that you grew up idolizing. It's the reason why you came a director. And Singer got caught trying to make a movie that was a sequel, a direct sequel to those movies, but it didn't have any of the feel or the spirit or the look of those movies other than the John Williams score and the, like, the credit sequence. And that's where the whole thing just kind of fell flat. That movie depresses me more than I think just about any other superhero movie, because there are terrible superhero movies that don't depress me as much as Superman Returns does.
Yeah. Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's like,
I just find it joyless.
In the era of horrible superhero films like Daredevil and Elektra and Ghost Rider, you know what I mean?
Like, and maybe it's because I haven't revisited terrible movies like Elektra very often, and I will watch Superman Returns, you know, from time to time, because I like Brandon Routh in it. I mean, I like Frank Langella. Kate Bosworth was a disaster of casting. But, you know, like, so there are things to like about it.
I thought Spacey sucked in that.
I agree. I'm not on board with Spacey in that movie.
The one thing I appreciated about Spacey was his ability to want to get his hands dirty, right? Like, that whole shanking scene where he makes that, like, because he's been in prison, he makes that kryptonite shank and he, like, stabs him in the back. I thought that was an interesting take, but everything else was just over the top, and too much. And then I hate Super Kid. Boy, do I hate Super Kid. I loathe, like, my whole. I walked. We talked about this on the podcast, but I walked out of that theater so pissed off about so many decisions in that film. So I'm like, so basically they. They made Superman this wholesome character, a deadbeat dad, right? So he impregnates Lois and he's off to go find Krypton. And then for however long, 8, 5 years, however long he's gone, he's got a kid. He doesn't know about it. He's not paying alimony, none of that stuff.
Yeah, well, he doesn't know about it, to be fair. He's in, you know.
And she, like, kept it a secret. You know what I'm saying? Like, she knew it was his kid, didn't tell him anything. Like, what the hell's going on here?
And she's letting another man think it's his. It's,
right. I'm like, what?
It's a weird movie, dude.
It is.
And you have all these characters that pre-existed. Is that the word I'm looking for? That had, you know, they already existed, and yet they had a story to tell, because technically the events of Superman 1 and 2 took place. Right. So then he's gone for 5 years and then he's back and they all look like they're 24 years old. It's ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought the therapy worked for this one, but it didn't for me.
Sorry. No. So, but I will say this. I do like the monologue at the end when he's talking to his son. I take out why he's there, all that. I just think that's a good scene. But other than that, it's not good.
Yeah. And the studios, they just, for some reason, the studio has lost patience with Superman faster than the other characters, right? Because then they did nothing. I mean, you got, like, Flyby, and then there was this version and that version. None of those ever happened. And then you wound up with Man of Steel, and they lost patience with the character right away after Man of Steel. So I don't know why it is that the studio loses patience with Superman so quickly and goes into panic mode. But I think it's probably best that they just stay away for now from the character.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I just think it's a shame, because the success of Wonder Woman was on the back of Superman, in my opinion. Like, I think that character became what Superman should have been, represented what Superman should have been, I think. You know, the heroism, the, you know, just, you know, outright looking for the good in people, all of that stuff. And those are certainly, you know, attributes that are altruistic to Wonder Woman, but I just, they got that so right. And then you look at, you know, the version of Superman and BVS, and you're like, this is just a far cry of what this character is supposed to be and what he's supposed to mean. And yeah, I mean, that's the disappointing thing, is that in some senses, you know, they can get it right for one character and just completely miss the boat.
It's also a far cry for what they tell you the character's in at the end of Man of Steel, right? So I've always said all along, we never got to see the Superman that they talk about in BVS. You know, they talk about, oh, the love affair, the world's love affair with Superman. We never got to see that love affair. You tell us that it happened, but we don't see it. I mean, other than a little, those brief, you know, little, that montage where, like, people are, like, idol worshipping him. But, like, we get a Superman that, in Man of Steel, that doesn't trust us and we don't trust him. And then in BVS, we're right back to having a Superman that doesn't trust us and we don't trust him. There was an amazing Superman movie. Regardless of what you feel about Man of Steel, there was an amazing Superman movie that could have been made with Henry Cavill and that entire cast, and they just chose never to make it.
And that is absolutely on the money, and I say that, and I know you're saying that as a compliment.
Yes, absolutely.
To Henry Cavill Superman, who, if he doesn't return, which it doesn't look like he's going to be, he's a more wasted Superman than even Brandon Routh is.
Yes, absolutely.
Full stop. And one last complaint about Superman Returns that actually ties into Man of Steel. Why have two filmmakers reduce Clark to drinking Budweiser?
Wow.
Dude, he's drinking Budweiser in both those movies.
There's a deep cut right there.
Totally. Yeah. He's drinking one with Jimmy Olsen in the bar when he first returns to Daily Planet, and Jimmy Olsen doesn't think it's suspicious that he's back after 5 years, and all of a sudden, so is Superman. Lame. And then he's drinking one at his parents' farm in Man of Steel watching football.
Yeah. I
Budweiser.
Well, it's the American beer, apparently.
The Kansas beer.
Yeah, he can't be
Smallville. It's definitely the one company that's willing to spend tons of money to put their product out there.
Apparently.
It's certainly product. All right, sorry, I get off the rails about that.
But okay, Chris, anything else, or should we close this?
Yeah, I think we can close up.
If I may just say one last thing, it is currently 10:30 p.m. Central Standard Time on Tuesday, February 5th. And by the time people are listening to this, we may have a title, Star Wars Episode 9.
Yeah.
I think that's going to come out tomorrow. We need to do something, whether it's on Batman on Film or on you guys' show. We need to talk about that title.
Agreed.
For sure. So it hasn't dropped yet.
Did you see any of the rumors that were rolling out about it? What it could be?
I don't think so. But
somebody apparently leaked something on Reddit, which, of course, who knows how much weight that holds, but it's allegedly something like the balance of the Force or something like that.
I seriously doubt the word Force is in it, but I'm not obviously privy to that. It's just a guess.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe it is.
I don't know. We'll find out soon enough.
We'll find out.
Exciting.
All right.
Alrighty. So let's do some plugs. Rick, since you are our guest, please.
So just follow us on Batman on Film. Bill and I try to do a vlog every week. There's a lot of great podcasts that are going on right now, and that Ryan Haas has taken the helm on. I'm also about to do a satellite show with Back to the Future with Ryan Haas and Paul Herman. And I want to do something with you guys soon on Batman on Film. I'm gonna get Mario back over on a vlog. So just follow us. There's all kind of fun stuff going on. Follow me on Twitter, Shewrick, SHEWRICK.
Sure. Any other shows you want to plug, Rick? I know you've got some political commentary stuff like that going on.
Yeah, I didn't know if I wanted to put that on here.
Go for it.
Yeah. So if you're into politics, I have a site, Left Shoe Politics. It is left leaning. So if you're right leaning, we can still talk about all this stuff and get along just fine. But we're doing a lot of really cool stuff on that site right now. Our Facebook page is blown up. Our Twitter is okay, so please follow us over there. But we've done some really cool podcasts recently. We've got some amazing things lined up about election reform, electoral college, all kinds of stuff. We've got some great guests. Some things I can't even say yet, but it's going to be an exciting year.
Awesome.
Cool.
Great. Okay, Chris.
Of course, for us, you can go to thefanboygarage.com. You can check out our episode archive, listen to the current episode. You can shop our merch store and shop on Amazon using our Amazon Associates link. And, of course, we always want you to join the conversation. You can tweet us at thefanboygarage, and you can find me on Twitter at RealCAlmighty.
And you can find me on Twitter as well at StartingSith. Don't forget to visit our Instagram page. We've actually got that kicked up again, starting to post some things more frequently. So if you're not on the Twitter, please do check us out on Instagram. And, you know, we've got a lot of fun stuff planned for you guys in the next coming weeks. Some more special guests. And so be sure to, you know, keep it locked and stay tuned for the next available show of the Fanboy Garage.
All right, so let's close up. Talk to you next time.
Later, guys.